जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन, यमुना तीरावनचारी, यमुना तीरावनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय, श्रीमद भागवतम की जय, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा, नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम्, देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेष भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया, भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट 33 ऑनवर्ड्स। राइट, आई एम ए भ्रातर, सो दिस इज 35, 33 एंड 34 डोंट हैव प्रपोर्ट, सो 35, आई एम मे भ्रातर हासोयम हित्वा स्वान् सुहृदो धमः पितृव्यहन्तु पादव्यो विष्णोर्दासवद् अर्चति, अयं मे भ्रातृहा सोऽयम् हित्वा स्वान् सुहृदो धमः पितृव्यहन्तु पादव्यो विष्णोर्दासवद् अर्चिति। अयं मे भ्रातृः सोऽयं हित्वा स्वान् सुहृदो धमः पितृव्या हन्त पादव्यो। One more. Would you like to try? अयं मे भ्रातृः सोऽयं हित्वा स्वान् सुहृदो नमः पितृव्या हन्तु पादव्यो विष्णोदासवतर्चति। अयं दिस् मे माय भ्रातृः किलर् आफ् द ब्रदर् सह ही अयम दिस हित्वा गिविंग अप स्वान ओन सुहृदः वेल विशर्स अधमः वेरी लो पितृव्यहन्तुः ऑफ ही हु किल्ड हिज अंकल हिरण्याक्ष पादौ एट द टू फीट यह ही हु विष्णु ऑफ लॉर्ड विष्णु दासवत लाइक अ सर्वेंट अर्चति सर्व्स। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद। दिस बॉय प्रहलाद इज द किलर ऑफ माय ब्रदर। व्हेन डिड प्रहलाद किल हिरण्याक्ष? What's the pastime where Prahlad killed Hiranyaksha? Well, he didn't kill, but he has a reason why he's calling his son the killer of his brother. For he has given up his family to engage in devotional service of the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant. So we'll just read translations of the previous verses so there's continuity. So we know the three verses that Prahlad Maharaj spoke. Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova, that was the first one. Second, Nate Vidu Swartha Gatim Hi Vishnu. And the third one yesterday, we heard from Maharaj. Naisham Matistavadurukramangrim. So then the next verse is, after Prahlad had spoken in this way and become silent, Hiranyakashipu, blinded by anger, threw him off his lap and onto the ground. Indignant and angry, his reddish eyes like molten copper, Hiranyakashipu said to his servants, "O demons, take this boy away from me. He deserves to be killed. Kill him as soon as possible. This boy, Prahlad, is the killer of my brother, for he has given up his family to engage in the devotional service of the enemy, Lord Vishnu, like a menial servant." Purport. Hiranyakashipu considered his son Prahlad Maharaj to be the killer of his brother because Prahlad Maharaj was engaged in the devotional service of Lord Vishnu. In other words, Prahlad Maharaj would be elevated to Sarupya liberation And in that sense, he resembled Lord Vishnu. Therefore, Prahlad was to be killed by Hiranyakashipu. Devotees, Vaishnavas, attained the liberation of Sarupya, Salokya, Sarshti, and Samipya, whereas the Mayavadis are supposed to attain the liberation known as Sayujya. Sayujya Mukti, however, is not very secure, whereas Sarupya Mukti, Salokya Mukti, Sarshti Mukti, and Samipya Mukti are most certain. Although the servants of Lord Vishnu, Narayana, in the Vaikuntha planets are equally situated with the Lord, the devotees there know very well that the Lord is the master, whereas they are servants. Om Ajnanat Mirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthavitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpataru Bhishcha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Just a little recap, because those three verses are my favorite verses in all of and then there are, when Prahlad comes back in 9th chapter, there are some fantastic verses. But these three are my favorite, and they follow a particular line. So I'm not going to explain those three, but just assume the scenario, to get into the emotion of the situation or the pastime. Hiranyakashipu is so great, like we heard, that all the demigods in the universe would be scared of seeing him in the eye. And by his command or raising of an eyebrow, they would all shiver. They would all come and make their offerings to him. Such is his power. He has his son, very delicate 5-year-old boy, sitting on his lap. And basically the son says that you don't have the capacity to know Krishna. You cannot do it on your own. Even if someone tells you, you won't understand it. You gather people together in a conference, still you won't get it, because you have uncontrolled senses. Oh. It is okay to hear from someone that you have uncontrolled senses. But to hear from one's own son, ask any father, to hear from their son that you don't know something is the most painful thing. Because for a son, the father is like the superhero. Especially the child, of course, once he grows up to a teenager, then nobody is a superhero. That's a different issue. But for a young child, the father is the everything. And it's the ego of a parent to hear from the child that they don't know something. That it's very hurtful, very, very hurtful. Even the smallest things. You know, many parents, when they have children growing up, if the child has to say, "You don't know this? You didn't know this?" That really hurts. I'm going through it right now, so I can tell you. "You don't know anything. You didn't know this?" It is like, oh, come on. What do you mean, "I don't know anything"? It's very different. And what to speak of a person like Hiranyakashipu? All the demigods come and say, "You know everything, you're the boss." And little boy says, "Oh, you have uncontrolled senses." "What? I've not controlled something? I've controlled the whole universe." "Yes, except your senses." Ah! Adanta Kobir. And to add insult to injury, he says, not only are your senses uncontrolled, You're chewing that which has already been chewed. Because you never, it's like something chewed and thrown away. It's like picking up a chewing gum on the street and eating it. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's like, ew. It's already been chewed. Is there any taste in the chewing gum that's been spit out? But he's saying that's what you're doing. And then he continues. That is because you do not know that your ultimate goal is Vishnu. Of course, he now says Tesham. He puts many people in that category. And he says, that is because these people do not know that their ultimate goal is Vishnu. Vishnu, my enemy. My son is preaching to me that I should surrender to my enemy. How dare he? Then the insult continues in one sense. I mean, of course, Hiranyakashipu is taking it as an insult. He says, Durashaya ye bahirarthamanina. That is because all your motivations are completely contaminated. Your aspirations are third class. And bahirartha, you have turned away from Krishna and Vishnu. That is your problem. And people like you and those leaders who are like you, they're blind following the blind. Imagine telling Hiranyakashipu, you're a blind fellow. You're blindly following a materialist. Or you're the blind leader of other materialists. Andha yatandhe upaniyamanaha. Being led by. Tepi isha tantriyam. Isha tantra, Prabhupada translates as the laws or the ropes of material nature. Gurudam nibaddha. So when someone is tied by a rope, just for some humor, or at least physics, if you will. If you tie someone in their hand, or you tie someone's hand, and you pull them, they can offer a resistance. Correct? There's a tug of war. You hold a rope, the others are holding a rope, they're pulling, and your feet are planted in the ground, and you can offer some resistance. If the same rope is tied to your waist, and you're pulled, you cannot offer resistance. Try if you like. It's impossible to plant your feet on the ground, because when the rope is around the waist, that's where our core is. We call it the center of gravity. You move that, the object cannot stand. So this tied by the ropes means that we are bound around our waist by these ropes of material nature, that when they just pull, we cannot offer resistance. If we are tied by the hand, we can even still manage. That Isha Tantra is the ropes around the waist. Think of it that way. And a little tug, and we're taken away. So he says to Hiranyakashipu, you're tied like that. Urudhamni Baddha. Urudhamni means a very, very formidable rope. But no one can cut that rope. And what's your solution? Go and take the dust of the lotus feet of the great devotees and bathe yourself in that dust. Smear yourself with the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee. Not only do I have to surrender to Vishnu, which is a problem, I have to surrender to his devotee. That's even worse. Right? For many of us, offering obeisances to Vishnu is not a problem. Offering obeisances to a devotee of Vishnu, that's the resistance. This guy says, and not only you have to offer obeisances, smear your body, abhishekaha. And that's why the word is used here, artha apagama. Apagama means disappearing or being removed or washed away or eradicated. Something when it sticks, you cannot wipe it, you have to wash it. So what is the washing? It's the abhisheka. By the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee. There's one of my friends is moved to Toronto now. But when we were just starting off Krishna consciousness, he was very enthusiastic. He was not married at the time, but he was living in our neighborhood somewhere. And he would come to wake us up at 4 o'clock in the morning, because we just knew, and he was very enthusiastic that we should do Mangala Arati. So he would give us a call or knock at our door, and then the three of us, Himangi, myself, and this Prabhu, we would walk to Jagadananda's house to wake him and Ananda Vrindavan up. And Jagadananda and Ananda Vrindavan came a little later, so they were not really so enthusiastic to wake up in the morning. So we would all go and, you know, ring their doorbell, and they would be like, oh, who's this? It's already 4 o'clock. Then we would wait till they showered and were ready for Mangala Arati. So then I think it was Jagadananda at that time said, you know, morning time is very busy if you do Mangala Arati. And he wanted us to do the whole 9 yards, you know, Mangala Arati, Japa, Tulsi Puja, the whole thing. And then till then he wouldn't go. Even class was included. So Ananda Vrindavan said, you know, it's tough because my husband has to go to work. I have to make breakfast. It doesn't work out. So next morning, 4 o'clock, he shows up at our doors with a little pressure cooker with khichdi already made in it. So now we cannot say we don't have time to cook. I don't know why I'm sharing this. There was some connection, but it's lost. Anyway. So, anyway, I forgot why I was. No, there was some connection. Submission, I don't know. It would be nice if I made it that way. But something about resistance. Anyway. So, no, that would be nice too. But no, it's not the case. Anyway. Mahiyasam Padaraja Abhisheka. That the devotees, they somehow carry this potency that removes all the things spoken in the previous verses. Adanta Gobi, sense control comes in, the blindness goes away, the lust. This is why. Because the dust of a lotus feet of the devotee, that was the point. So this person he made up a little, I guess, a rhyme, which was sweet. I don't think I can repeat it back. But something like, our hearts are encrusted with lust. And something that is a must is the dust of the lotus feet of a devotee, which is the one that removes lust. So dust is a must for removing lust or something like that. He made up something, which I thought was very sweet. Which is true, that the lust in the heart can only be removed by the mercy of a devotee. Otherwise, Krishna says, Mahashano Mahapapma. We've been discussing this in our Bhakti Shastra. Mahashana, Ashna means to eat. And Mahashana means the great eater. So lust is considered to be a great eater. What does lust eat? Whatever you feed it, sense gratification. So Krishna says, Mahashana Mahapapma. Not only does he eat sense gratification without any limit, we all have a limit for eating, but we have no limit for sense gratification. And Hiranyakashipu is the king, the emperor of lust, that he could eat or he could gratify his senses without getting tired. If we try, our senses, they'll become tired. There is a limit for each of us. Wherever that limit is, there is a limit. Hiranyakashipu had no limit. Mahashana means the great eater, Mahapapma. By eating, lust impels us into the greatest sinful activities. And Krishna says that it's like Dushpurena Analena Cha. The more you feed, the more it burns. It's like a fire, and sense gratification is the fuel to the fire of lust. The more you feed, the more it eats. It devours everything and everyone. And so the only solution is service to a Vaishnava. that can remove lust very, very easily. There are many, many pastimes of the most lusty people. As soon as they come in contact with a pure devotee, they're done. Somehow they have no taste for it anymore. This is the magic of the Pada Raja. Raja means the dust. When one humbles oneself at the feet of a pure devotee and offers service, the first thing that's attacked is that lust. It goes away. Philosophically, lust is the perverted reflection of love. Love for Krishna becomes perverted in this world as lust. From unconditional, selfless love, it becomes highly conditional, self-centered, selfish. We'll call it lust. Right? According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, anything done for the sense gratification of an individual is lust. And anything done for the sense gratification of Krishna is love. They look similar, but the object is different. So the son is telling him, that's the only solution for you, is you have to go humble yourself in front of a devotee and smear the dust of his lotus feet. Most intolerable things that a son can say to his father, especially Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu's response is he becomes angry, throws his son away from his lap onto the ground and calls his followers, kill this fellow, impudent fellow. He's the killer of my brother. Because he's supporting my enemy. In the purport, some shifting gears, Prabhupada gives the five kinds of liberation. I'm not going to dwell too much on it. This just because it's there, I want to express. Liberation means freeing the soul from its bodily engagement, both subtle and gross. Gross bodily engagement and subtle engagement is the mind, the intelligence, and false ego. So primarily liberation means being freed of the false ego and being situated in one real ego. That is, I am not this body, I am a spirit soul. That's the first level of liberation. It's called mukti. And Prabhupada calls it sayujya. Sayujya is, I am not this body. And Prabhupada says, that is not very secure. Then there is another grade of liberation called vimukti. Vimukti means completely liberated. This is why Narada Muni says, vimukta manina. One's intelligence, if it's not completely purified, one thinks, I am a liberated person. Even if he has been liberated to the point that he thinks, I am not this body, still it is not complete liberation. And he says, patanti adha, such a person can fall back into the materialistic sphere. So complete liberation are the other four. Sarupya means they have a form that is similar to Lord Vishnu's. Samipya means they are near. They become close associates of the Lord. Sarshti means they have the same opulences as Vishnu. And Salokya, that is, they are situated on the planet, Vaikuntha planet of the Lord. These are the four liberations that a devotee gets. Sayujya Mukti means my identity is merged in the Supreme's identity. Which, Prabhupada says, is insecure. It is insecure because it is not a complete understanding of one's identity. It is a complete understanding of what one's identity is not. I am not this body. That's perfect. But who I am is not clear yet. So you can think of Sayujya Mukti as an intermediate stage of liberation. It's in the direction of, but it can be risky. It's risky because Sayujya does not identify activity. And the soul by nature is active. So you'll find Sayujya Muktas, those who are so-called understood that they are not this body, their activity is very much in the material sphere. It looks like, or it is, high-grade or refined goodness activities. Now, goodness is very much material, although very refined. So it's not something the devotees are after. What devotees get are the other four. Any questions or comments on this before I move to the next set?
Oh, I can't even see. Hare Krishna.
Thank you for dazzling effulgence.
Thank you for your class. So you were mentioning on the point that Hiranyakashipu was the controller of the universe and the demigods, but he could neither control his son nor his anger. Rather, he was controlled by anger. And in these series of verses, basically, Hiranyakashipu's peace of mind was dependent on how his son treated us. So my question is related on a practical level to this point is that, like me and my brother were discussing this point like some weeks ago, is that generally in our Krishna consciousness experience, our enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness is usually based on, unfortunately, on how people treat us, what they say, and therefore we see sometimes that I'm leaving Krishna consciousness because of you. Not that we could judge, because that could be us next week. So what are some things to keep in mind? What should our foundation of Krishna consciousness be? Because it's usually based on how what someone said or done, therefore I'm leaving Krishna consciousness, and then therefore kind of we destroy kind of our, you know, whole spiritual life.
Well, in the material world, and this is true even in the case of devotees, because we're still in the material world, unless we are pure devotees and out of bodily conception of life, the first order of, let me phrase it differently. As long as one is conditioned by a bodily conception, one will always look for a cause outside. It's just the nature of the material world, that all the causes seem to be outside of oneself. It's just how things work. And so yes, to such a degree, one thinks of others or other circumstances as the perpetrator of my problem or problems. But it is one's own bodily conception to a very, very large degree that actually makes the person feel, what we say, victimized. We were just having this conversation a couple of days ago. Now, let's say genuinely the cause is on the outside. It is true. Someone can. Still, a person who is free from bodily conception does not see that as a cause. Dharma the bull, when being beaten by Kali, this is in the chapter 17 of first canto. Just on Tuesday night, Rasika Vanjiri, myself, and a couple of devotees were talking about this chapter. Chapter 17, first canto, Bhagavatam. The Dharma the bull is being beaten. Three legs have been broken. And it's the verse describes that the bull has fallen to the ground, urinating right there and rolling in that mud out of pain, cannot move. This guy has a club in his hand, the Shudra, dressed like a king, and Maharaj Parikshit appears on the scene and he asks the bull, who did this? So it's called, you have to have a statement of crime, otherwise you cannot punish. So you ask the bull, who did this? And the bull's answer is like the most bewildering answer. He says, I don't know, I can't say for sure who did this. So there's a whole conversation that ensues, because Dharma says, this person who has the club in his hand, he's only the instrument. So I can't say the instrument is the cause. Some may say it's my fate, some may say it's karma, some may say it's the demigods, some may say something. Who's the cause? Can't say. But we know that everything happens under the purview of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Well, who's to say? So a person who's liberated does not see the instruments as the true cause. Now that's, I mean, I can say it, but I don't have any realization of it. But that's the teaching, to go beyond the instrument. Like, wow, what does that look like? So cause is always seen outside of oneself. But the real cause is the false ego. This aham mama conception. So as long as there, to whatever degree it's there, to that degree one sees a cause outside of himself. To say it in a nice way, to the degree we're freed of false ego, we don't see others as the cause of our problems. But, you know, it's so much there that on a day-to-day basis, it constantly is bothering us. And we have to tell ourselves, it's not they, it's my false ego. It's not they, it's my false ego. So actually, there's a simple exercise, if you like. When something like that happens and we feel, you know, that someone is doing something to me, it is said that you should ask three whys. Why, and why? Three times. Not continuously. You have to have a why and an answer, of course. Otherwise, why? Why is that bothering me? Because they said, blah, blah, blah. Why is it what they said bothering me? Something. And you ask the third why, generally it will bring back for a honest, truthful devotee, that generally the third why brings back to, oh, because I may be in a bodily conception of life, or however the answer comes. It's supposed to be a simple exercise. You ask why three times. If after three times the answer is still out there, that means we have to chant Hare Krishna and have some work to do. We have to chant Hare Krishna even otherwise. What'd you say, John? Take some prasadam. Why? Yeah, whatever. So purification is necessary. But generally that brings us to a very honest picture. We may accept it or not. That's a different issue. Yeah, accepting truth is not so easy. Okay, any other comments, questions? Okay, text 36. Vishnurva sadhava saukim nu karishyati asamajasaha sauhrudam dushtadhyam pitrur ahadyaha panchahayanaha. Although Prahlad is only 5 years old, even at this young age he has given up his affectionate relationship with his father and mother. Therefore he is certainly untrustworthy. Indeed, it is not at all believable that he will behave well towards Vishnu. It's like basically he's not trustworthy. At such a young age, he has given up his affectionate relationship towards his father and mother. Why is he giving up his affectionate relationship? Or seems so? Because he's telling mommy and daddy, basically daddy, surrender to Vishnu. Okay, text 37. Now this is the analogy as to why he feels so. Although a medicinal herb, being born in the forest, does not belong to the same category as a man, if beneficial, it is kept very carefully. Similarly, if someone outside one's family is favorable, he should be given protection like a son. On the other hand, if a limb of one's body is poisoned by disease, it must be amputated so that the rest of the body may live happily. Similarly, even one's own son, if unfavorable, must be rejected, although born of one's own body. Proper philosophy, just spoken by the wrong guy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed all devotees of the Lord to be humbler than the grass and more tolerant than trees. Otherwise, there will always be disturbances in their execution of devotional service. Here is a vivid example of how a devotee is disturbed by a non-devotee, even though the non-devotee is an affectionate father. The material world is such that a non-devotee father becomes an enemy of a devotee's son. Having determined to kill even his son, Hiranyakashipu gave the example of amputating a part of one's body that has become septic and therefore injurious to the rest of the body. The same example, of course, may also be applied to non-devotees. Chanakya Pandita advises, Tyaja Durjana Samsargam Bhaja Sadhu Samagamam. Devotees actually serious about advancing in spiritual life should give up the company of non-devotees and always keep the company with devotees. To be too attached to material existence is ignorance, because material existence is temporary and miserable. Therefore, devotees who are determined to perform tapasya, penances and austerities, to realize the self, and who are determined to become advanced in spiritual consciousness, must give up the company of atheistic non-devotees. Prahlad Maharaj maintained an attitude of non-cooperation with the philosophy of his father, Hiranyakashipu, yet he was tolerant and humble. Hiranyakashipu, however, being a non-devotee, was so polluted that he was even prepared to kill his own son. He justified this by putting forward the logic of amputation. Believe it or not, a couple of days ago, I came to hear of a new phenomena. I don't know the, because I didn't spend the time to research it. There's a phenomena, it's a medical phenomena called BIIB. I don't know what it means, because like I said, I haven't had the time, because I thought, oh, someday I'll do some research into it. But basically this BIIB disorder is that a person feels that a particular part of his or her body does not belong to them. They don't feel that it, so if they have, let's say, two legs, they feel that one of the legs does not belong to them. And the doctors, if they ask them, what do you feel? They say, this seems like an extra limb hanging from my body. Suppose we had a third leg that hung, came out of here or something. It feels, you're aware of it, it's uncomfortable. Like that, they feel either their leg or hand is uncomfortable. So what they do is they tie it up. Some persons will tie it up like a stump, or hold some crutches and walk. When they can perfectly walk without it, they will walk with crutches just so that they don't want to identify with that extra leg. Not extra, it was the leg. And one of the doctors asked, what's the sensation? He says, I don't feel my consciousness pervading that limb. So they actually go through the medical procedures of amputating that part of the body. Perfectly functioning hand or leg, they ask the doctors to amputate them. And after the surgery is done, they're asked, so how do you feel? Do you feel the loss? I said, no, I feel complete now. It's some sort of disorder. For them, the sense of normalcy comes after they're rid of that particular limb. Hare Krishna. I was astounded when I heard this. So here Hiranyakashipu is saying, this extra limb, this son called Prahlad, is contaminated. Unless I cut him, I will not feel complete. The logic, see, it's there in the Bhagavatam. Something that's been newly discovered, the doctors are trying to figure out why. This is why he feels like that. Of course, in this case, it's the subtler sense of things. But what is subtle shows up in the gross, right? The same, Hiranyakashipu is going through BIIB disorder, whatever it is. And he feels that my own son is called Atmaja. Atmaja means one who's born from one, right? It's an extension of one. A child is considered to be the extension of one's body. So it's called Svajana. Svajana means my own person. Jana means a person or people. Svajana means my own. It's an extension of one's body, and he wants Prahlad to be amputated or cut off from his sense of body. Why? Because he is siding with the enemy. So his philosophy is that the non-devotees should give up the company of devotees because devotees contaminate their non-devotional attitude. The devotees also have a similar philosophy. We give up the company of non-devotees because non-devotees pollute a devotional attitude. Same principles, just matter where you're standing. They also believe in association, non-devotees. They don't want the association of devotees because it spoils their life in one sense. It spoils their consciousness. Non-devotees feel that devotees spoil their consciousness. Did we feel like that before we became devotees? I felt it like anything. I was being invited to programs and I found all sorts of excuses why I should not go. Hundreds of excuses. Every time I'd get a phone call, can you please come? Oh, today I'm apartment hunting. Okay, can you come today? Today I'm not well. Can you come to the program now? I have office work. Today I can't go. My health is not good. Something. When we were used to live in downtown, I used to be part of a Bhakti Vriksha with Sachikumar Prabhu way up in the suburbs. And he would call us, will you come for Bhakti Vriksha? Oh, we don't have a car, it's too far. So he used to come by train. So every Friday he would drive in so that he would call us and say, so you're going to come? Today I don't have a car. He said, no, I have a car, I'll drive you. And he would drive us to Bhakti Vriksha from there. For him it was inconvenient to drive into the city, park and all that. But every Friday he would drive in just so that we would not give the excuse of, I don't have a car. Oh, no, I'll drive you. So we used to feel like, why is he interfering? And anyway, I don't know if I should take names, but you know, Balram Prabhu and I, we were friends before we became devotees. We still are friends. But we used to play 4 days a week together and all that. And literally, you know, 3 nights of the week he would eat in our house. Or we would eat in his house. You know, there was a little group of fellows, I guess, wasting time. And so Balram Prabhu went for a particular weekend seminar here. I think it was Prema Bhakti Prabhu who did some weekend course in Bhagavad Gita. And after that course, we stopped seeing Balram Prabhu as much. So we would call him, hey, come on over, have dinner. And he would make excuses. Oh, today I can't come, I'm busy. And we kept wondering, what's going on? You know, he would call himself to our house and, you know, invite himself to eat. And now, even after multiple reminders, he's not coming. Is everything okay? Oh, yeah, yeah. He would call us, he would share lectures with us, but he would not come and eat in our house. We're like, what's going on? So 6 months later, we started coming to the Bhakti Vriksha and this, that. And then, you know, as we read the purports, you know, one should avoid the association of non-devotees. I became so upset with him. You're thinking of me as a non-devotee and that's why you would not eat in our house? And he's like, yeah, something, you know, I gave some nice excuse. But that was how, you know, slowly he's thinking, oh, these are the people I should not hang out with. So we have this, oh, they're going to spoil my consciousness. So our shastras also says, asat sanga tyaga. One should keep away from association that will contaminate one's devotional attitude. Now, keeping away doesn't necessarily mean physically, although that has impact. I shouldn't say there is no impact. There is impact. But our Bhaktivinoda Thakur's instruction is that we should give association rather than take association of non-devotees. We should give our association. We become, for the non-devotees, somehow or the other, we should become instruments of good association to them. Now that's tough, but that's the call to action. And not take their association. Take their association means take their conceptions of life. Their conceptions of life usually are make money, feel secure about the things that you have collected, your education, money, status, family connections, etc., etc. These are the things that people rely on or take shelter of. And we as devotees are asked to be, come to the stage of Krishna being our shelter. And as we are cultivating that, on the side, having some other shelter weakens that shelter taking of Krishna. So we don't take that association. We try to not take that association. But we try to give association. So that's the art a devotee has to learn, how to give association while being with the family members or people of the world, however it is. Because devotees are in all walks of life, they have to learn how to give that association. So for that, they have to be trained in the association of devotees first, before you can give something. It's a difficult topic, or it's a topic that generates usually quite a bit of conversation, but I don't know today. Let's see. Any questions, comments? Okay. Nothing else from you guys? Wow. Submissive ears. There's a pastime of Srila Prabhupada with Giriraj Swami. I give you the chance. That after Prabhupada spoke, he had spoken in Mumbai in the house of some very, very rich person. And a lot of people were there. They were also highly well-placed socially. And so Prabhupada finished class and he said, any questions? And there were no questions. So then Giriraj Maharaj expressed that when you don't have a question at all, it means one of two things. One, it means that you fully understand and fully accept what Srila Prabhupada has said, therefore you should surrender your life to Krishna right now. Or, is that you didn't understand anything and you don't accept anything, and therefore there's no question. Anyway, go ahead.
Hare Krishna. That was a nice point that the devotee you made, who kind of dragged you, even though you're resistant, he was very merciful to you and kind of dragged you to. But my question is related to in this purport, in this verse, Hiranyakashipu uses analogy to kind of justify his demoniac mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And for on a practical level, I'm sure we've all had the experience of that we kind of use analogies and logic to justify our false ego. But it seems like, you know, it doesn't work, because instead of developing, in light of this Trinada Pusuni Chena aphorism, instead of developing a taste for Kirtaniya Sadahari, we develop a taste for, you know, gossip, slandering character, if there's some disagreement. So even though we hear these things all the time, it's like, what to do? How can we, you know, it's like, what to do still?
It won't work. Mm-hmm. Because Prahlad Maharaj has already spoken, Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova, Mito Bhipadyeta Grahavratanam. It's not going to work. Unless Mahi Yasam Padarajo Vishekam, unless we humbly serve the devotees, this sense of whatever what you expressed, it will not go. We can hear hundreds of classes, we can be inspired by hundreds of classes, but that thing will not go. It will not go. Because it says, Adanta Kobi, the uncontrolled senses, they're uncontrolled because the mind is uncontrolled. The mind is uncontrolled because there's false ego. And the only solution for false ego is humble service to the pure devotees. So unless one is actually doing that in one's consciousness, it will not transform. Therefore we say hearing is so potent that by hearing, those conceptions start at least being challenged, if not removed. Ideally removed, but challenged at least. And as soon as there's a challenge, it manifests as a question, therefore inquiry. Oh, hold on a second, here I am. I'm convinced of this, or I thought like that. you're saying something different. Or tell me more how this can be, however is the question that is phrased. But our conceptions, when they are challenged, they bring up questions or doubts. And so hearing is that process that's supposed to remove one after the other the conceptions of false ego. So false ego becomes weakened. That is Mahisham Padarojo Visek. One of the elements of Padarojo Abhishekam. You have anything else? Anything else? Jai Jagannath, bro.
Mentioning that association means accepting their conceptions. That may not happen initially, but by continued sangha, it takes place usually first imperceptibly.
Right.
And then you're overcome by mundane conception. So, although we want to give association to non-devotees, to really be able to do that, it seems like it requires a lot of stability in Krishna consciousness. So many of us are not at that stage of stability yet. So it seems it would be a little presumptuous to think we could give association to such persons. And yet, many of us, we do have obligations to like family members, for example.
Sure.
That's usually the major bad association that many of us may be getting. Because family members are generally bad association for all philosophical reasons at least. And at the same time, we may think, oh, we want to make them favorable to Krishna conscious, like a very nice Krishna, or like a very nice son that will make them favorable. And this way we convince ourselves to be around such persons which may not actually be conducive at all for Krishna consciousness. So at the same time, we're pulled by that sense of responsibility to family members and so on. So how does a person end up balancing that in his consciousness that he doesn't go crazy? Where he feels guilty, like on the one side, I'll stay with the devotees because they're just bad association, but internally you're feeling really guilty because there's this sense of responsibility to them. Or the other side, I go and I'm imperceptibly and contaminated, thinking that I'm all right, like this.
So as many examples there are of persons who feel obliged to family, but then become influenced by those conceptions, there are as many examples of those who don't. So there should be something that makes a difference. There are many, many, many devotees who, after becoming devotees, were able to give their association to their parents or family members, brother, sister, friends, whatever, and make them favorable at least to Krishna consciousness. So it's not always that one becomes blown away or taken away by familial association. But the risk is there. And it's a risk that must be acknowledged, and it is formidable. It's there. So what is it that makes a difference is the individual's or that devotee's own convictions about bhakti in the first place. Here we are saying Prahlad Maharaj is only 5 years old, of course. Now we can't say, oh, that's Prahlad. Let's not get there. But as a young boy, his convictions are very strong. His sense of individuality is strong. Now many times when we move with family, we haven't, in many cases, a person doesn't have the sense of individuality from that family. They sort of merge into it. And then that's where the difficulty comes, that although I am part of that family, my sense of individuality is not there. But a person who can maintain that individuality while being part of that family, their conceptions are not hurt, usually. The same will happen in a devotional environment, actually. In a nice way, but still, we merge into the association that we have without the sense of individuality. Which is also not the best In terms of one's own development. That's a different topic for some other day, but we merge into that association as well. Oh, I have this group think. Everyone thinks like that, I think like that too. So the whole process of bhakti is to find out that individuality, one and different simultaneously. And that's the growth of a devotee. So what we find usually is like a back and forth phenomena. Devotees get all convinced about bhakti, they meet their family or whatever, or friends, and then they lose a part of it. Then they have to come back and replenish more of it. They go back, they lose some of it, they come back, they replenish, they lose some of it. But in that cycle or in that process, there is a little growth. So what the same things they were affected by a few years ago may not happen the same way. At least they can say, it manifests as, you know, they fight with the family or however they do it. Some have the art of doing it, some just don't. But that's this sense of individuality that's coming up, which is a nice thing. And with time, they will say, I shouldn't have said it that way, I could have said it differently. You know, one of my heroes about this is His Holiness Radhanath Swami. At a young age, that is something that I appreciate because I heard about his life, I guess, more. Giriraj Maharaj as well. Yeah, Giriraj Swami too. That regardless of where he was in the world, you know, he still kept either writing to his parents, or, you know, he didn't break that. To date, you know, he visits his father, spends time, but doesn't mean that, you know, he's taking in all the... So, okay, now he may be more advanced when he say when he was young. He knew that his sense of individuality was clear. So for us, that's what we have to develop. That I am a devotee of Krishna, though I'm part of such and such family. I don't have to lose that identity. The challenge is we lose it. So when we come back, the devotees preach to us, you know, for about a few hours, and what did you do like that? Why did you say that? Whatever. Hear Bhakti Aloka, hear Bhakti Vinod Thakur again and again, and whatever. And we build it up. And next time I meet my family or friends, I know what I'm going to say and do. But we lose a little bit. We come back and say, I shouldn't have. It's the phenomena by which one's individuality starts manifesting. Otherwise, we will keep losing it in one sense. But that's the nature of growing. It will all be there. We all know for ourselves, when we first were becoming devotees and we would go back and interact with family and friends, the impact that it has versus perhaps today, it has is different. And some who grow up already being individuals, for them it's not such an issue. They can perfectly be in the same place and not have such a big thing about it. You know, for me, telling my family that I will only eat prasadam, this is way back, was a tough one. Because, you know, all their sentiments would be hurt and what to do. But I learned. I learned very much in the beginning. That, you know, there are ways of doing it without either their knowing it or saying it in a way without hurting them. And when my father was sick, I would cook for him every day. Prasadam is what I offered. But when things were busy and he had someone else come and cook, and he would say, why are you not eating? I say, no, I've taken diksha, I will only eat prasadam. He didn't like it, but I didn't change my situation. And he learned to accept it. Okay, this is how it's going to be. For example, I mean, I'm sure there are other examples where I'm not sure so strong, but that's the phenomenon of growing with associate. We're taking, we give a little bit, and then we give and take a little bit, and then we just give. And that's somehow most of us will go through it. There is maybe a special soul who doesn't go through it at all, which is very fortunate, but most of us go through the rigor of that challenge. That's how my observation is. Mukunda?
Hare Krishna. So one way of giving up association is like you gave the example of like Radhanath Maharaj, for example. He's now able to see his family and everything, but he's giving association.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a way of giving up association is by giving rather than taking.
Correct.
Another way is by just literally not seeing them at all.
That is also another way.
So is one better than the other, or does it depend?
Depends on a person's situation, depends on a person's Krishna consciousness, depends upon their ability to give, their own, what giving means versus what taking means. Depends. Now, there are some association that we must give up, where the very gross sense of violating regulative principles, we should give up. There's no question of, let me handle a little bit here. There's absolutely no question there. Where illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating is very, very stark. In those areas, that association must be given up. And in the areas where that's not prevalent, some association can be given. Yeah, sure, offense, very much true, correct. Very much true, thank you for adding that. Offensive to the devotees, one must give it up. There's no room for, it's all right, I'll hang around a little bit, I'll give my association. Where there is stark offense to a devotee or Krishna, one should not be in that association. Thank you for that point. It's very nice. Good one. Okay. Anything else? Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Here's anything after class. Why don't you ask in class?
Because I don't want to interrupt you, but I'll say the same thing.
Yeah, but silly, others may also have that silly thing.